Hi, good afternoon. Thank you for joining our call this afternoon. This is Alina Chagai at the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services. Today's call topic is COVID-19, specifically tailored discussion for nursing homes. Today, we are also joined by some guest speakers, and you'll have the opportunity to hear updates from CMS, learn about some best practices that your peers are employing in the field in response to COVID-19. We'll have some time for questions for our guest speakers, but I'd also like to encourage you to save some of your questions for our new series, which is called CMS COVID-19 Office Hours. And those calls will be a new series every Tuesday and Thursday from 5 to 6 p.m. Eastern, where we will have all of our CMS subject matter experts at the ready to ask your questions, clarify anything you're looking for clarification on in response to our waivers, our recent policy announcements. But to start, I will kick things over to Jean Moody Williams, the acting director here at CMS's Center for Clinical Standards and Quality. Jean, turning it over to you.
Great. Thanks so much, and thanks for everybody for joining this call today. We, as was mentioned, we'll start by giving just a few updates of from CMS. There are a couple of things that have happened since the last time I talked with you about a week ago, and then we'll go right into our presentation. So the main thing I wanted to highlight was on April 2nd, CMS, working in cooperation with the CDC, we issued critical recommendations, and it was directed to state and local government as well as nursing homes. And I think it's important to recognize that it was for both of those audiences. And really the direction was to help mitigate the spread of the coronavirus. So the recommendations really built on and strengthened recent guidance from CMS and CDC related to effective implementation of long-standing infection control procedures. As a reminder, on March 13th, CMS issued guidance that advised nursing homes to restrict visitors, and on March 23rd, CMS announced new focused infection control surveys intended to assess facilities' compliance with infection control. We are continuing to conduct these targeted infection control inspections, and we are using the assessment tool that was distributed at that time. We're also encouraging all nursing homes to use that tool as well to do their own self-assessment. Those guidances that I mentioned can be found on our website. If you go to CMS.gov, there's a big link that will take you to our COVID emergency page, and all the guidances are listed there. But the recommendations announced on April 2nd highlighted the urgency of immediately ensuring that staff are complying with all CMS and CDC guidelines related to infection control. Now, given the highlighted visibility of the virus, you might be thinking, well, of course everyone is adhering to the guidelines. But through our survey processes, we have observed that on occasion, this is not the case. And we recognize that the volume of residents that you're dealing with, the unique circumstances and the challenges that you have, and you are working, at high capacity. But if you could set aside just a little time to observe and to train and to make sure that all of your workers are following the guidelines, I think it would go a long way to help you and obviously the residents as we go along. So the other thing, again, we recognize there's not a lot of time to sit through extensive training, so we are working with the CDC to come up with short period things that could be done, like podcasts or webinars. So what would be really helpful, if you would let us know what kinds of things would help you and support you and your staff in your work. But secondly, we urge state and local leaders to consider the need of long long-term care facilities with respect to PPE and COVID-19 tests. We know that state and local leaders are really working hard to distribute PPE and the tests, and we just wanted to heighten the awareness of the needs of the long-term care facilities. Additionally, Medicare is now covering COVID-19 testing when furnished to eligible beneficiaries by certified laboratories. And these laboratories may choose to enter nursing facilities to conduct the test if you make those arrangements with them, and they can also be paid a fee for the collection. Third, we noted that nursing homes should immediately implement symptom screening for all staff, residents, and visitors, and that would include the temperature checks and other items that was outlined in greater detail in that guidance. And then fourth, when PPE is available, I think it's important that we ensure staff are using it appropriately to the extent possible, and I know that there are some modifications that are going on to ensure that the supply lasts, but some of the things that we have observed are things that we think if with improvement or more training on how to, for example, take off the PPE or remove the gloves in a certain way would be helpful. And to avoid transmission within nursing homes, facilities should use separate staffing teams for residents to the best of your ability and to work with state and local leaders to designate separate facilities or units within a facility to separate COVID-19 negative residents from COVID-19 positive residents. And we are aware that there are some facilities that are doing this. So just to highlight our efforts to support this, working with the CDC, we're kind of looking at three domains. We're looking at assessment and support. So I already mentioned the tool that we sent out, and CMS will be conducting surveys with that, as well as your self-assessment. And QIOs are providing technical assistance to a focus group of nursing homes. So you can go on the website at QIOprogram.org, and that page contains helpful information about infection control strategies and updates and how to contact the QIO as well. CDC is working with state health departments to contact nursing homes to discuss preparedness. So there's a lot of support out there, and we are working together so that we're, you know, trying not to duplicate efforts but give you what you need when you need it. And then we are, the next domain, we're looking at learning from our enhanced infection control interventions. I mentioned a couple of things that we have observed that we think have better attention to. And then today we're going to share some best practices from the field and how others are working through some of the challenges. And then our third area of focus or domain is training, education, and guidance. And I've already talked about that we really want to be able to meet your needs. And as issues arise, new findings, to make sure that we're getting that to you as quickly as possible, either by way of guidance, so we encourage you to keep an eye on our website for that, or through other means. Lastly, I want to just mention on April 3rd, we did issue a number of blanket waivers that were combined with our earlier waivers released in March, so please take a look at those. There are a lot of flexibilities that have been provided, such as a long-term care facility. As we mentioned, you can temporarily transfer COVID negative patients or COVID positive patients to another facility. We've made some waivers, and you already knew about the 3-day prior hospitalization. We waived that early on. That reporting minimum data set, we waived some of the requirements and time frames for that, waived the staffing data submission requirements in many cases. And then we also had information about accelerated or advanced payments that many people are taking advantage of. And lastly, I'll mention, of course, we are waiving the requirements for some of the in-person visits for nursing home residents. to allow for the use of telehealth options. And we did develop, and this was by your request, so this is an example of when you ask for it, we're going to try and provide it. We developed a COVID-19 nursing home telehealth toolkit, which is available on our CMS website. So that's a couple of the updates that we have done over the past week. So you can see there's a lot going on, and constantly we're producing things. And we hope that you had the opportunity to take advantage of some of that. Now, I'd like to turn to the portion where we start to have some dialogue and share some best practices and ask questions of each other. And I thank Dr. John Mielke, who is the medical director at Genevieve in Minneapolis, Minnesota. And he's going to start our discussion today with some best practices. So, Dr. Mielke, I'll just turn it to you.
Thank you very much. I appreciate being able to present today. I'm representing really many outstanding providers in Minnesota. And I thought the main theme of my talk here should be to, quote, stay connected. Communication, it seems to me, is so essential at this time. In that regard, I represent the Minnesota chapter of PALTC-AMDA. We are known as MAGIC, Minnesota Association of Geriatrically Inspired Clinicians. And we have a clinical practice alliance committee that's been very active during this time, providing our long-term care partners with some evidence-based guidelines. The benefit of these is that they have the support of nearly all the geriatric provider groups in our metro area and others around the state. The easiest way to look at these guidelines is go to our website, which is minnesotageriatrics.org. So minnesotageriatrics.org. One of the early efforts by MAGIC CPAC was identifying that we had no special COVID positive resources for post-acute care. So a letter was drafted to government officials, long-term care trade associations, and our long-term care partners advocating the urgent development of COVID positive dedicated facilities. Thanks to the hard work of MHealth Fairview, Alina, and Press Homes in our area, we will soon have two facilities dedicated to COVID-positive patients with a total of 150-bed capacity. One of these buildings is being retrofitted with 50 negative pressure rooms, and they're being staffed by trained facility staff, a respiratory therapist, I'm really proud of our community for doing that. I think we still have a long ways to go, probably. Other long-term care facilities in our area are moving towards special floors or dedicated areas for isolation. And, of course, we're all providing isolation in place. We've been a little bit fortunate in that we haven't hit the surge yet, but I would say to everybody that early planning is the key to this. MAGIC CPAC has also been instrumental in many of the things you've already mentioned, early closure of facilities to visitors, finding and advocating for PPE, understanding how we should test patients with limited capacity to test. In addition, our community has limited interfacility travel by therapists, hospice personnel, and providers. We are all attempting to work remotely or visit one facility at a time. One last thing I'd like to add, in part of staying connected, my own group, Genevieve, has had a morning teleconference meeting at 8 a.m., lasts about an hour, for nearly a month. We have 120 staff and providers that meet to discuss our policies, roll out our telehealth, PPE availability, and difficult case discussions. Our CEO, Amanda Tufano, has emphasized the need for provider safety in these meetings. Our providers discussed the mutual frustration of not being on site to support staff, but we understand our potential role as vectors. And out of that discussion, a very practical thing has happened, many things actually, but many of our providers are simply calling our facilities on a daily basis to check in and see what support is needed. In addition, I think we've been very surprised that the telehealth visits have been well received by our patients. They really like seeing our face on that little iPad. It's amazing. And all of these activities help us stay connected, even though we are in Minnesota staying at home most of the time. Thank you for allowing me to contribute today.
Great. Thank you so much. And that's, of course, very timely given our discussion about using different facilities for patients. So I'm sure there'll be some questions about that when we open it up. But before we do that, I'd like to introduce Carolyn Larson, who's the administrator of Lynn Care Center, which is in Front Royal, Virginia. And I'll turn it to you now, Crystal.
Thank you. Hope everybody is holding in there. These are trying times, and I think this is one of those things that we all have to band together and work together and help each other. Some of the guidance that I wanted to share with you, some things that have been working really well for us here in our area in the Shenandoah Valley of Virginia. We do have a small coalition of our hospital partners, skilled nursing facilities, and assisted livings that we have been meeting at least weekly to talk about ideas for setting up quarantine areas and isolation areas, sharing of resources, and just generally supporting each other. And we've seen some very positive movement in that area, facilities that were typically competitive with each other are now working together for a common mutual need. As our doctor said earlier, you know, we are all working very hard to set up quarantine areas and isolation areas, quarantining new admissions that we don't have a negative COVID test on. We're limiting accesses to our facility to only essential staff. For us in particular, that was a bit of a challenge because we're hospital-based, so we have dedicated staff that only come to our facility and not floating back and forth between the hospital. We have implemented telemed through the use of iPads to limit our physician visitation, and we do have a few providers who are being solely dedicated to us. We continue to support our residents and their families with calls through Skype, FaceTime, allowing window visits with families, using phones to facilitate conversations in that situation. We've come up with some very creative ideas to facilitate some favorite group activities. 6-foot bingo was a real hit, having people in the doorways of their rooms and cleaning the equipment before and after. As we all know, bingo is a really huge favorite hit in our population. I think the biggest challenge that we have faced is the anxieties that our staff and our residents and their families are facing during these times. So I think keeping them informed, sharing knowledge with them. We do daily updates through an app called Populo that lets our associates know the changes that are being made through the day. That comes out 7 days a week. We also do like a little newsletter every day just for our facility specifically, updating the staff on what's going on every day. And we're doing room service for our residents with activities carts and sharing with them the new updates for the day, especially the alert and oriented ones. We want them to be aware of the changes that are necessary. I do believe that education is the key to managing our employees and our residents in these very desperate times. We've been working with conserving PPE by following the CDC recommendations, monitoring our supply closely. Our health system has an initiative of a 10,000 mask challenge to our local community to get a donation of 10,000 handmade masks. Our retired director of nursing, who retired in July, has been making 50 a day, so she's making good use of her retirement time. We've been providing extra treats for our staff. In the beginning, we were doing some chair massages because our wellness centers had closed within the system. We ceased that because the challenges with social distancing as it's moved into our area. But candy, ice cream, devotionals to keep our morale good. The employee assistance program has really amped up. They have a 24-hour hotline, obviously, to support staff who are in desperate times of need. They've also set up a biweekly call, and it's basically just a call to talk about decreasing stress, improving your mental health and wellness during this pandemic, talking about self-care, mindfulness, and how to keep yourself grounded during that time. I think the important thing that we've all had to remind ourselves many times is just to breathe. And one of the things that I've been focusing on with my leadership team and with the staff here at the facility is trying to find five things every day to be grateful for. Even though this is a very difficult time, I do believe there's a lot of lessons that we can learn and some positive changes we can make for our future. Thank you, guys.
Thank you so much for that. And all of those were some really good tips. I especially appreciate the remember to breathe part. I think we all have to do that every now and then. Operator, can we please open up to see if there are any questions?
My pleasure. If you'd like to ask a question, please press star, then the number one on your telephone keypad. That is star one. We'll pause for just a moment to compile the Q&A roster. And your first question comes from Mark McDavid.
Good afternoon, and thank you all so much for this. We work with skilled nursing facilities across the country and primarily on the therapy side. And so just curious what you're doing in facilities that have zero positive cases at this point versus facilities that have positive cases as it relates to therapy and how you're dealing with your therapist who, you know, in many cases, and other staff go from building to building throughout the week for PRN jobs, or maybe they're a float staff and that kind of thing. So how are you handling your therapy, the therapist, and at what point are you terminating therapy services or possibly continuing? Thank you.
Hi, this is Crystal. So we've worked with our therapy provider. We work with Select Rehabilitation to dedicate staff only to our facility, and each of those therapists had to agree to let go of any PRN positions that they had at other facilities because the risk of cross-contamination was just too high. We have worked with them to give them extra time by doing personal assistant activities like water passes. Folks on caseload, they've been increasing the time they're spending with them by doing the showers to supplement some of the aid duties. But I do believe it's key in these times to stop that cross-contamination between facilities.
I would add that I would begin that process of dedicating therapists to only one building now. I haven't looked very carefully at the rest of the country, but I think we're fooling ourselves if we think our community is going to dodge this bullet. So it's really important to stop cross-contamination and the contamination from the community into each of these buildings right up front. So I would have dedicated therapy staff as much as possible. In our buildings with COVID-positive patients, our therapists are doing all the therapy in the rooms. We're not using the therapy gyms at all.
Okay, thank you. Is there another question?
You do have a question from Shelley Tuggle.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, that's fine. Thank you.
what was the app that you're using to text and communicate with your staff on a daily basis?
It's called Populo. It's P-O-P-P-U-L-O. It's available on the App Store and then the Apple Store as well. It works very well, and you can push out communications via that, and it will come up as a notification on their phone.
Thank you.
Thank you. Next question.
Your next question comes from Carrie Dunning.
Thank you very much. This is a question for the people at CMS. I realize that you have given the MDS assessments some timeliness waivers. My question comes to payment, because once the assessment is done, it's supposed to be sent to Keys and with an accepted message before billing can occur. Is there any movement to figure out how we can bill if we are lax on the timeliness of those assessments?
Yeah. Evan, can you address that?
Yeah, I think CMS is working on some Q&A question and answer for that. So apologize for the delay, but we'll be sending something out on that as soon as possible.
Thank you.
Okay, and maybe we could get in one more question. I know we're almost at time.
Your next question comes from Maureen McGee.
Hi, thank you. So our question is related to advanced Medicare payments, but not those specifically, more of the grant type of money that was given to CMS. I hear something about $60 billion was granted to CMS to give out as grant money to healthcare providers as long as they filled Medicare. Can you comment on that?
Yeah, I believe that we are working on the process and getting information out on that. We don't have the right folks on the phone today, but thank you for the question. And if you are able to join into our office hours, we'll make sure we'll have the subject matter expert to see how far along we are with those grants. Thank you. Alina, I'll turn it back to you to kind of wrap us up.
Sounds great, Jean. Thanks, everyone, for joining our call. And again, thanks to our guest speakers today for sharing their best practices from the field. As I mentioned at the top of the call, we are hosting office hours again tomorrow, Thursday, April 9th, from 5 to 6 p.m. Eastern. And we also encourage you to send any questions you have throughout our nation addressing the pandemic. You can email us at COVID-19@cms.hhs.gov. Thanks again, and we look forward to speaking with you all soon.
That does conclude today's call. You may now disconnect.